few things more annoying in life than when you take a sip of a drink and it goes down the wrong pipe. It's just annoying. Can't really breathe for a few seconds. You're coughing. Your cheeks get puffy. Your eyes get red. And I had that happen to me about 10 seconds ago as I was taking a sip of my beverage.
It always happens right the moment before we come back from break.
Of course. I'm just trying to, you know, whet the appetite, so to speak, for the segment, get myself hydrated.
Yeah, keep the pipes lubricated, man.
Yeah, and no. It went down the wrong pipe, and I just spent the last 20 seconds choking. So that's my life. How's yours going? It is Chris Thomas Turtle on a hump day with you until 10 o'clock. Orin and I are about to do something I think is fun. Falcons are on a bye week, so I've been doing some different things on the show this week to, you know, highlight some of the other sporting events that are going on because of how important Falcons coverage is here. And rightfully so, especially after that win versus Washington. Last night we had a fantasy expert on. We talked some baseball with Grant McCauley. We'll talk some more baseball tonight. And in 15 minutes, Caleb Johnson's going to stop by.
Let's go, Hawks. Let's go, Hawks.
Hawks play Monday. You heard that,
right? First preseason game against, Houston on Monday.
Yeah, you heard that right, and that'll be right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. NBA preseason's already here. Sheesh.
Catch it.
Fever, catch it. Speaking of the fever, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. There's a lot going on in the WNBA right now. That story involving Nafisia Collier has only exploded.
It's grown.
Exponentially.
And she's getting all the backing right now from all the ladies in the WNBA.
As she should. I think they'll have a new commissioner pretty soon, if you want me to be perfectly honest about it. It doesn't look like they want
Kathy
to negotiate the new CBA. Kathy Engelbert, the current commission. That's a lot going on there. All right, let's do a little. Would you like to play a game? Yes, I would. Contender or pretender? We're going to go through every team in the NFL, division by division, and we're just going to give a quick thought on if the team is a contender or pretender.
Okay.
Now, before we do this, Orin, how many contenders do you think we're going to have?
Oh, I would say...
You think double digits?
No. No, not right now. Not even right now. I would say probably maybe at the most six.
Wow. I'm going to say over. And I promise I will not purposefully tilt the results. I'm tracking both Orin and I as we go here. Got my pen and paper here ready to go. All right. Let's start here in the AFC East. The New York Jets. We'll go from bottom to top. We'll go from bottom to top.
The last shall be first.
Yeah. New York Jets at 0-4. Contender or pretender?
Pretender.
Yeah.
No, contender. They're a pretender.
Yeah. This one's not even worth.
Still years away from anything remotely good happening for the Jets right now.
Yeah, there's not even like a deep dive analysis to do there.
At
1-3 without Tyreek Hill for the rest of the year, the Miami Dolphins, contender or pretender?
Even with a healthy Tyreek, they would not be a contender.
I agree. They are a pretender. The New England Patriots at 2-2. Drake May starting to look pretty good. I think their defense isn't terrible. Christian Gonzalez just needs to stay healthy. They're 2-2. Division is stinky. What do you think? Contender or pretender?
Pretender.
Ooh, see, this is going to be our first disagreement. I'm going to go contender for the New England Patriots at 2-2. And just as the Jets, there was no discussion because of how bad they are. The Buffalo Bills, there's really no discussion because of how good they are.
Sitting at 4-0 right now, and probably going to stroll into Atlanta next week and be 5-0, and that'll be a fun Monday night football game. I'm sorry.
Well, let's not completely rule them out, though. You have been pretty pessimistic on the Falcons this year, my friend.
I'm just saying, man.
I never want you to do anything but keep it real.
Told you after Buffalo that next stretch of five games, I think they can go 4-1. And with how banged up San Fran is right now, that's looking a little bit more likely.
All right. AFC North. Cleveland, we've been talking about them all night because of Shedeur Sanders and his antics. They are 1-3. Contender or pretender?
They are a pretender. They can't even get the quarterback position straight. The guys they have there aren't very good. And the bad part about it is they have a really good defense.
Really good.
A really good defense.
Held the Packers to 10 points good.
That's just being wasted right now with very suboptimal and subpar. They may have found something in Quinshon Judkins at the running back position. They might have their tight end of the future in Harold Fannin Jr. Don't have a quarterback, though. So, no, absolutely not pretender.
This one's tough. The Baltimore Ravens at 1-3. You still believe?
So, the last time, if I read this correctly, they started 1-3 in the season. They did not make the playoffs. No idea when Lamar's coming back. That defense is beat up to hell, and it's not very good at all. Derrick Henry looks mortal. It just... there's problems right now for the Ravens that you wouldn't think would have been problems at the start of the season. So by virtue of that, I will say pretender.
I agree for all the reasons you just said. Cincinnati Bengals somehow 2-2, but not great.
It's not a great two, not a strong 2-2.
Yeah, I think pretender there.
Yeah, just good Lord.
The
Jay
quarterback's
Brownie,
not
man.
Good. I mean, he's not good.
I saw the guys from a pro football commenter, he talked about today how he thinks that Joe Burrow has to be the best player in the NFL because of what the Bengals have transformed into without him on the field.
I mean, look at what he did last year. He almost was the best player.
He led them
in the NFL
single-handedly almost to the playoffs himself. Yeah.
Pittsburgh 3-1, looking good. Division's weak. I'm going to say for sure a contender.
Yeah, man. Just by virtue of, like you said, the division that they're in right now. And Aaron Rodgers, I mean, turning back a little bit of time right now.
All right, so we are halfway through the AFC. I have 3, you have 2. We are doing contenders and pretenders in the NFL here on Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. The AFC South, the Tennessee Titans, woof, 0-4.
Nope.
I don't think there's much to discuss here. Pretender. Unfortunately, I think I have to say the same about the Houston Texans.
Yeah.
I'm going to go pretender there.
Again, it's just pieces on offense that are great. They may have found their running back of the future in Woody Marks. That offensive line is dreadful. So, yeah, just not great again. Again, like Derek Stingley and Kamari Lassiter on the outside at corner for those two. You got your stud pass rusher and Will Anderson Jr., but the offensive line is holding them back right now, so no.
This one's tough. The Jags are 3-1, but are they a contender or pretender?
I don't buy Trevor Lawrence. I'm sorry. We had Chad Parsons on last night, the fantasy guy, and he talked about the number of turnover-worthy plays that Trevor Lawrence has had. There used to be this crazy stat where it was Matthew Berry talked about for quarterbacks, it was passes that should have been intercepted or intercepted passes that were dropped. And I got a feeling Trevor Lawrence is high up on that list right now, throwing a bunch of balls to the opposing team that they're just not bringing in. And eventually that gap kind of closes of the balls that aren't caught and the balls that are caught. So, yeah, I just don't buy them yet either.
I don't either. I agree with you. Pretender there. And then the Colts, 3-1, started off as the hottest team in the NFL, but came back down to earth last week. Are you still buying Indiana Jones and the Colts?
No, it's Danny Dimes. Everything eventually comes to a not-so-fun end with him.
I agree. I think they're a pretender as well. So no teams in the AFC South are contenders right now.
Shutting them out. Shutting them out.
Through the first 4 weeks of the season. The AFC West, this one's going to be tough. The Raiders at 1-3. I thought they were going to be better than they were, man. I'm disappointed by them. I'm going to say pretender.
Pretender as well. Although Asen Jansy had a bit of a
coming out
an
party.
Arriving, if you will, this past Sunday. But, yeah, just still – Brock Bowers has been up and down this year, too. And
yeah.
Gino,
I don't know if he's 100%
Gino.
Healthy.
Yeah.
Broncos are one of the tougher teams to diagnose. They're 2-2.
Do you trust Bo Nix?
No. I'm going to say pretender.
There you go. That's the answer. Pretender.
Kansas City Chiefs for me. Again, you know how I feel about this. Got to beat them to beat them. So I'm putting them as a contender.
Yeah, we just had Frank Schwab on. He talked about all the weapons that they're getting back. Well, Rashee Rice and having Xavier Worthy get healthy, putting more weapons on the outside for Patrick Mahomes. They are going to be a tough team to beat the second half of the season. So, yeah, give me them as a contender.
This might be my most controversial one. I'm going to go pretender on the Chargers.
Oh, I will go with you on that one.
Oh, really? Wow,
they
okay.
They lost Rashawn Slater. as the season started. They just lost Joe Alt, their other tackle. So for a team that wants to be a physical, run-the-football type of team, it's not great when you lose your two bookends on the outside. So Keenan Allen's been a great story thus far, but how much can you depend on a receiver who's 33, 34 years old to keep making plays for you? It's just – it's Ladd McConkey. You talk about a guy disappearing this season.
Yeah, which is crazy after how good he was last year.
Yeah, just falling behind those two, behind Quentin Johnston and Keenan Allen. So, I mean, they have a good defense, but I just – eventually at some point or another – they have to become that identity of running the football with them. It's going to have to become a lot more present. And I don't think they have the hosses up front to get that done.
I think we both agree. Let's start the NFC and the East. Giants pretenders, even with Jackson Dart. No, thank you.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Dallas Cowboys. No, thank you.
Wop, wop.
No, CeeDee Lamb. Commanders. Looks like Jaden Daniels is coming back this week. Are they back in the mix?
I'm still going to go pretenders.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go contender for the Commanders. I think once their offense gets whole, I think they're going to be fine. And then the Eagles, no discussion there, obviously the best team in the NFL.
Let me ask you a question about the Eagles real quick before we get on.
Eagles?
Here. The Eagles there. Are they going to have enough offense to get it done, or are they just going to be one of those teams that just does enough, the bare minimum, to win ball
No,
games?
I think they're a turn-it-on in the playoffs team at this point. Like Saquon, I'm not surprised if they're like
slow it down a little bit right now.
Let's save those legs to be fresh come January, sir. I'm not worried about them at all. Bears, disappointing. I'm definitely going pretender there.
Yeah, not there yet.
Minnesota, same thing. Carson Wentz, JJ McCarthy, interchangeable. Defense is being wasted. I'll go pretender there. Packers, bad loss. I still buy them though. I'm gonna say still a contender for now.
Same thing with them that Sandy is that the Chargers have right now. Just that offensive line up front, a lot of injuries right now to those guys. They lost their right tackle, and then the left tackle's been out for a minute too. So, I just at some point or another, Jordan Love either has to become the dude or not be the dude. And he hasn't done it yet, I don't think, to show me that he can be the dude.
See, I think he is the dude. He's had a couple of really good seasons. It's not just one. So I think he is the dude. We'll see. We're only four games in. And the Lions, 3-1. You buying them?
Yeah, I'm buying the Lions, all man. Right.
So I'm buying them as well. I'm at 8. You're at 5 heading into the home stretch here. Contender or pretender on Chris Thomas tonight, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. The Saints. Not worth a discussion.
Nope.
Carolina Panthers at 1-3.
Nope.
No. Even after what they did to the Falcons. Tampa Bay at 3-1. I think we both agree there.
Yes.
They're very good. And the Atlanta Falcons. Contender or pretender?
And Frank Schwab had it right. We still don't know what this football team is yet. Until we can see it on a week-to-week consistent basis, because as high as we are right now after this Commanders win, we were just the opposite, the inverse, baffled how bad they looked versus Carolina.
You're right. A part of this is a heart pick. I gotta go contender.
Yeah, just show it to me. If they can put it together, like I said, that next five-week stretch after Buffalo, if they can put consistent performances together over those next 5 weeks after the bye, maybe it's a different type of situation.
All right, final division. I saved this one for last because I think it's the hardest to differentiate between. The NFC West, Cardinals at 2-2.
Pretender.
Yeah, I agree. Rams at 3-1. I think they're a contender.
They always find a way to sleepwalk through like the first third of the season.
Yeah.
And as we get to like week 9, 8 or 9, they hit a switch and they make the playoffs and end up hosting and winning a playoff game. So, yeah, and as long as McVay and Stafford are still there, I will go contender.
Okay. Two more. Seattle, 3-1.
Pretender.
I agree. I don't think they're legit either. They're 3-1, but I think they're a paper tiger. And finally, San Francisco 49ers at 3-1.
I think they're a pretender. I just think it's going to be too much to overcome like Baltimore, all the injuries they have right now. And you got to watch the use of Christian McCaffrey at some point or another. It just Brian Robinson's got to get a lot more touches. Just
don't say that, Oren.
I'm sorry for your
don't
fantasy
purposes.
Don't
say that, Oren.
I'm sorry for your fantasy purposes.
He's getting me like 23 points a game, Oren.
They cannot keep giving him the football 30 times a game, dude. He will he will crumple.
All right.
He will like Haynes King. They need to both subscribe to the hey, less is better. Less is more with those two guys.
All right. So final tally. I have 11. Oren has 8. So more than you thought. A couple more than you thought. Contenders and pretenders. That was fun. We'll do this. Maybe we'll do this like at each third of the season. We'll do this after another 4 weeks and then another 4 weeks to see how many teams have been added or dropped off. It is Chris Thomas tonight. When we get back, let's check in on the Hawks. Their first preseason game coming up in just a couple of days right here on Sports Radio. 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Believe it or not, the Atlanta Hawks play basketball next Monday right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And there is a lot to dive into with the team that I think has a ton of promise this season in a certainly compromised Eastern Conference. To break all that down, let's welcome in our insider, Caleb Johnson. Make sure you follow him as well as his new podcast. Caleb, what's the name of the podcast so everybody can go check it out?
It's pretty simple. Atlanta Basketball with Caleb Johnson. So, you know, much like Joe Patrick on football, we would kind of keep it simple with, like I said, Atlanta Basketball with Caleb Johnson.
All right. We'll make sure that is everybody's clarion call right there to go check it out and download and rate, review, subscribe, and all those good things. And Caleb, you yourself got in the mix at Hawks Media Day asking the question that was on everybody's mind. What did you hear from Trae Young about his contract and where the two sides stand right now?
Yeah, I tried to go from this perspective, which is I feel like if I was the star player of a team and it seemed that they wanted me around, they wanted me to mentor the young players as they asked Trae to do last season, I feel like I would want a long-term extension done. And so I framed it to Trae as, are you disappointed that it didn't get done this off season? Granted, now there's still, you know, some time before the season begins, but it all signs point towards an extension not getting done. And he kind of started off by saying, well, I don't know if that I would say disappointed. And then he kind of stopped himself and he was like, yeah, I guess you could say disappointed. Now the part that I think was clipped, it's weird because I posted the video, Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks posted the video, and yet there was some bigger NBA social media sites that tried to use like quotes and frame and take a section here and a section here and merge a quote together of Trae that was essentially saying, well, anything can happen. And the honest truth of what Trae said was, everyone knows my situation, which is to say everyone knows that I will essentially be a free agent at the end of the year. But what Trae was preaching to us at Media Day and what it seems like the team is very much focused on is being present. It's not worrying about how, you know, where we're going to end up in the regular season, what's our seeding going to be, how far in the playoffs are we going to make. It is that classic, you know, thing that we kind of make fun of athletes for when they get stuck in this like coach speak of taking it, I'm taking it day by day, but to some point actually living that out and saying, hey, you know, I can worry about today and learning my teammates today and trying to get better today. And then we grow from there. And so, you know, Trae also tried to hit me with like, bro, like I'm good. You know, like I got money. It's not like I'm in need of anything right now. I'm just trying to enjoy the moment and take the moment for what it is, which, as you kind of alluded to when you started the segment off, a team that on paper is the best team that Trae Young has ever had. He said so, and it's also coming at a time in which, you know, the Eastern Conference is weak.
How do you feel like from what you saw at Media Day and talking with the players and the coaching staff that this team is dealing with those expectations? You feel like they're ready to handle them?
Yeah, I mean, I think how the approach, and it's very clear that this has come from the top down. This has come from Quinn Snyder of saying, let's be present with the team. Let's learn each other's styles and what we're, confident in and the styles that we can play well, which it's been interesting because as I've talked to Luke Kennard, as I've talked to Chris Hopps for Porzingis, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, these new guys who have joined the team, they're all like, oh, this is a fun system. Like Quinn's style of play that is very fast-paced, that is read-based, which is so you're not doing as much sets. More so you're kind of coming down the floor quickly, and based on how the defense is set up against you is how you go about attacking them. And it seems like guys who haven't played in the system before, which would be, Kristaps Porzingis and Luke Kennard, because Nikhil did have some experience with this when he played with Quinn before in Utah. It seems like the guys who are new to this are enjoying it. And like I said, well, I mean, we're only 2 days in.
46.5 is the over-under win total, according to our friends at BetMGM. Caleb, that represents a 11 total jump from last season, which is remarkable year over year. But they did over, if you want to say, over excel. I know it wasn't the ending that we wanted last season with their win total, but I feel like that number is achievable, Caleb, and I think they can win even more. I think this team has the potential to be a top five seed in the East. What do you think?
Yeah. Five seed is a good place to have. I've been putting them in that 5-6 range. I don't know if that will end up in like the, if you can do that winning 48 games. These are all nice numbers that sound really good and I think are attainable when you look at them on paper. Like, because I think a big part of talking about, making a jump from last season to this season is talking about the fact that they dealt with major injuries like Jalen Johnson, who just absolutely ruined what would have otherwise potentially been a successful season. And so the caveat with this team, unfortunately, is always going to be depending on how healthy they are, because I do think this is a team that has more depth than I think they've had in quite some time. But yet a year ago, we felt like they were a bit deeper than they had been, and injuries hit them, and you had, Zachary Risache starting when he probably wouldn't have been, and you had Mo Gay playing big minutes, and the center position felt like a revolving door at times. And so 48 games is a number that I would love to have them at. I think fifth or sixth seed in the Eastern Conference, my jump in success for them is for them to make the playoffs and not be bouncing around that play-in level once again. But that is obviously very much dependent upon how healthy they stay. And I think kind of going back to the Trey conversation, I think that's why Trey doesn't have an extension right now, is because so much of this season is about proving it and being like, all right, if this team can't stay healthy, then maybe you do make some different moves and go in a different direction. Maybe Trey would want to do that. Maybe the team would want to do that from their perspective, and all of those sorts of things. So I think they're, Quinn Snyder kind of acknowledged to some extent that they know there is pressure. They know there is expectations, and that's why he's preaching so hard of the, hey, let's stay present. Let's be in the moment. Let's live, kind of that day by day sort of life.
What do you expect the plan for the beginning of the season to be for Kristaps in terms of usage?
I am very interested, Chris, in seeing how they use him, because it's funny. If you go on ESPN right now and you look at the depth chart for the Atlanta Hawks, they, much like a lot of people, have Kristaps Porzingis as a starter. I am someone who believes that may or may not happen. I also asked Onyeka Okongwu at Media Day what he expected his role on this team to be, because he earned being a starter last year over Clint Capella. And so I would wonder if he would come into camp this year, assuming, hey, I earned it, and so until it's shown otherwise, I should get that opportunity again. Now, Onyeka took the very mature, very responsible route, and he was like, I don't know what my role is necessarily right now, but I know who I am as a player and what I'm going to do for this team. And so I feel if it were up to me, I would approach this the same way that the Hawks approached DeAndre Hunter, which was, hey, we can manage his minutes a lot better if we're bringing him off the bench versus starting him. And we can get some favorable matchups when we do that as well, because you got to think like the way how dominant Kristaps is at shooting the basketball is something that the Hawks certainly want to exploit. In the same respect, though, I think it was Kevin Chouinard of Hawks.com who asked Quinn about, hey, could we get iterations where Kristaps and Onyeka play next to each other? And Quinn essentially was like, yeah, it's very much on the table. Like, we've got to figure out how they all play together. But I think the excitement level for Kristaps is so high with this Hawks team. When you start talking to guys, and I was talking to Trey yesterday about like learning a player like Kristaps and how you want to play with him. And he was like, I don't really have to figure a whole lot out. Like, I know I've watched enough basketball of Kristaps playing that I'm, you know, I've kind of already got a good idea. And then when we talked to Kristaps, he was like, yeah, it was crazy how comfortable I already am with this team after only playing essentially, you know, a day with them. But it seems like to some extent, you know, guys are already kind of getting on the same page.
Before I let you go, what do you make of this Kawhi Leonard story, which is just getting crazier and crazier, where essentially the former ESPN journalist Pablo Torre on his new podcast is essentially accusing the Clippers, for anyone who missed this, of setting up through a partner fund, essentially a bank account for Kawhi Leonard to the tune of up to $25 million, where they were continuously making deposits into this like pseudo company account and giving it to Kawhi Leonard at $2 million a clip. Do you expect this thing to result into some serious punishment in LA?
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how it plays out, because I think the league has handled it in a way that disappoints me, makes me a bit weary of, you know, essentially the Clippers getting away with this, because, I mean, as far as what Pablo Torre has presented, and I think he's done a very thorough job, and in fact, I was actually talking with some colleagues recently that I think Pablo Torre has done such a thorough job that a lot of people are starting to tune out some of the new updates, because it's like, oh man, it just seems like it keeps going and going and going, and that, you know, the Clippers have essentially circumvented the salary cap by, you know, funneling money through other places that Kawhi, you know, didn't have to essentially work for getting additional money. I think the thing that is going to unfortunately come out of this is that any future deals that go on between players and teams, they're going to be far more sneaky about it and make sure that appearance-wise everything looks like it's on the up and up. As far as what happens with the Clippers and, you know, if there's any suspensions or fines or anything like that, hearing Adam Silver say that he had never heard of aspiration until this whole thing came up was very concerning, because aspiration was about to fork over like $300 million at one point to be a jersey sponsor of the Clippers. And so, like, clearly that would have gone through, you know, the league office. So I don't know that we'll get any resolution anytime soon. And unfortunately, I don't know that we'll necessarily get the, you know, the justice that everyone is looking for. But I hope that it is taken seriously, because if not, if the Clippers are just given a slap on the wrist and the league says, well, we really couldn't figure anything out, then it will very much likely, you know, incentivize other teams who aren't doing this to, you know, to find their own ways of circumventing the CBA. And it seems like Pablo's already investigating the New York Knicks, because, you know, Jalen Brunson and Bridges up there. Like, they took team-friendly deals, which were very bizarre. And now it's like, oh, well, did you get some side deals, you know, with Dolan up there, or was everything above board? It's certainly going to be interesting how it plays out. And I quite honestly, I've got no clue which way.
Yeah, me either. It's fascinating. Again, if you missed it, go to Pablo Torre on Twitter, and he has the full investigative scope about this potential, as Caleb said, salary cap circumvention is the perfect way to put it. And that's a big no-no in the NBA. We'll see what happens. Caleb, thanks as always. We'll chat soon.
All right. Sounds good, man.
All right. That is Caleb Johnson, our Hawks reporter there. Yeah, we could do a whole hour on that story. That thing is absolutely crazy. But again, the bottom line, looks like the Clippers are being accused of knowingly funneling money into a side corporation that essentially worked as a second contract for Kawhi Leonard to the tune of like $25 million. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Let's talk Brian Snicker when we get back. Obviously, the biggest story here in the A is Snit stepping down. We'll bring in our buddy Lindsey Crosby of Braves Today. Who does he think could replace Snit? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more next. The biggest story today in Atlanta, obviously Brian Snicker stepping down as manager of the Braves, transitioning to an advisory role. So the search for a new manager begins in the offseason. Alex Anthopoulos certainly with a lot of work to do to cover all that and more on Chris Thomas tonight. Let's welcome in our good friend Lindsey Crosby. Make sure you check out the Braves Today podcast every single day and on YouTube. Lindsey, first of all, just a note on Snit, his legacy as a manager, one of the best to ever do it for the Braves, and he'll leave a lasting legacy.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Snicker is, believe it or not, the third winningest coach this organization's ever had. The top two guys ahead of him are both in the Baseball Hall of Fame. One of them is obviously Bobby Cox. The other one's a coach from Boston from like 1899. But AA, the players have all talked about how the clubhouse atmosphere, the culture, is one of the big things in Atlanta that sets them apart from everywhere else in the league. And Brian Snicker does that. He's the guy that built that. And he just took over the team as the interim when they fired Freddy Gonzalez. And the reason he got hired on full time was because the players rallied around him. They recognized how good of a person he was, how good of a leader he was, and they pushed for the front office to give him the full-time job. So he's going to go down in history as one of the best Braves managers, again, right behind Bobby Cox, and he's going to be in the Braves Hall of Fame next year.
When it comes to looking ahead to the future, how soon do you think they'll make a decision, and who are some names you think that we should be on the lookout for?
So this feels like something Atlanta is going to probably want to do sooner rather than later. Simply because they have an important offseason. And one of the biggest things that they need to figure out is, can they get shortstop Ha-Sung Kim to stick around on his player option? That manager is obviously a big part of that. Because of Atlanta liking continuity, I've already talked to some people that have said to watch out for current bench coach Walt Weiss, you know, former Braves player. He's been with Brian Snicker for a while now, but promoting him from the bench coach to the manager would give them the ability to retain a lot of the current staff, Rick Kranitz, Tim Hires, Freddie Gonzalez, Eddie Perez, and give the Braves a lot of continuity since they don't turn over the roster a lot. He already knows everybody. He has a managerial experience. Outside of that, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Continue.
Sorry. Outside of that, a guy like David Ross makes a ton of sense as somebody who's played in Atlanta. The fans know him. He's young enough to understand the modern game. He understands analytics and has a desire to get back into coaching. He's been a manager before. He's also available, and he does give you the ability to bring in somebody that's still related to the old school Atlanta Braves, but is not from that same coaching tree. If you're the kind of person who thought this year's team's issues were partly because of a lack of leadership or fire or accountability, bringing somebody who understands Atlanta but isn't part of that same group who was just here is really appealing as well. So David Ross makes a ton of sense to me as one of the main guys to get interviewed.
You mentioned sort of the Atlanta DNA. While Walt Weiss certainly has that, I would make the argument, Lindsey, that it just all sort of felt a little stale this year, and bringing in a new, younger voice might be what the team needs.
That is kind of where I am as well, and that's why I think rather than somebody like Walt Weiss, I like the idea of going, you know, you could go not completely outside of Atlanta, but somebody who's never coached here. George Lombard is somebody who spent three seasons with the Braves, became the Dodgers' first base coach, won a World Series there, is currently coaching with the Tigers. Also doesn't hurt his son's going to be a top 10 pick in the draft as a prep shortstop this year, and you'll have a top 10 pick. Ryan Flaherty is a name of a guy who played for Atlanta, currently coaching with the Cubs. I've heard somebody mention that to me today as somebody to watch out for here. But I do think the idea of going completely outside of everything, a Gabe Kapler, a Skip Schumacher, if you can get Skip out of Texas, them casting a wide net to try to see is a brand new voice these guys have never heard. Is that going to be what we need to get this team back in the playoffs next year?
Speaking of casting a wide net, what do you do with Ozzie Albies?
It feels like it's almost a guarantee you pick up his option. The difference in the $7 million club option and the $4 million buyout, that $3 million bucks doesn't really get you anything in free agency. So you pick up the club option. But I feel like with Ozzie now, another broken bone. We saw how he struggled with power earlier this year after the wrist injury. You need a backup plan for Ozzie. I think that provided Ha-Seong Kim comes back, I think now you need to find somebody who you're comfortable playing in the middle infield. You're comfortable playing in center field if you need to give Michael Harris a blow. That becomes a much bigger deal than it was before. But you got to bring him back simply because you're still paying $4 million if he leaves, and you're not going to get anything on the market with that $3 million difference.
If you asked this question, or if I asked you this question 2 months ago or 3 months ago, I think you would have laughed me off the phone, but is there a real chance Raisel Iglesias comes back?
I actually think there is. We mentioned it earlier. The Braves are big into continuity. After the All-Star break, he was one of the best relievers in baseball. And with the way that the closer market is looking like it could be a little bit deep this year with Edwin Diaz opting out and things like that, it would make a lot of sense for both Raisel and the team if they can get him on a bit of a discount to bring him back. Simply because most teams don't want to give multi-year deals to relievers in their upper 30s. And if he takes a one-year deal with somebody else, he's entering free agency in what is expected to be a lockout offseason. It's probably pretty easy to get him on a two-year deal to come back to Atlanta, but I think they'll push for a discount given how rough he was in the first half of the year.
How many other high-leverage arms do you think they need to bring in? Because I think you can make the argument they just went an entire season without a setup, man.
They did. And the big thing with this is they went for quantity over quality last year. They brought in 15 relievers on minor league deals. None of them made it to the end of the season. I think that they, even if they re-sign Iglesias, you'll get Joe Jimenez back. They need to get one other arm and preferably a lefty, simply because Dylan Lee, you saw how later in the year he had issues with home runs. He was really overused this year. But I don't think they have the trust in Aaron Bummer to be a high-leverage guy. I don't think they have the trust in Dylan Dodd to be a high-leverage guy. So I want to see one more high-leverage reliever and somebody who you would not be afraid to try out at closer if Raisel Iglesias struggles again to start next year, assuming you bring him back.
Talking all things Braves with our buddy Lindsey Crosby. Make sure you check out the pod and video every single day, Braves Today, wherever you get your podcasts. It looks like the rest of the lineup, Lindsay, should be intact. The outfield, I don't think they're going to make any changes there with the way Profar finished up. We know Riley will be back. We know Matt Olson will be back, obviously. We talked about the middle infield. The catching position is solid, if not spectacular. So it looks like maybe just the bench will need some retooling when it comes to the everyday lineup.
That's definitely an area of focus, and Atlanta not having a set DH next year should be able to give playing time if they find a starting caliber piece. That's something the A's talked about before. They say they struggle to build a bench because they can't promise you any playing time whatsoever because everybody plays every day. I do think something that they may look into doing is getting an outfielder because you can rotate Jurickson Profar through DH. You can rotate Ronald Acuña Jr. through DH. to give him some time off. If you can find a starting caliber outfielder, you can still give everybody some at-bats and playing time until somebody gets hurt, because somebody's going to get hurt. They always get hurt. And then you'll have three starting caliber outfielders left. And that's something Atlanta's not really had. You've always had to run somebody who was below average out there, whether it was Jared Kelnick, Stuart Fairchild, something like that. So I do think bolster the bench a bit, but they may go for a starting caliber outfielder to add to the mix just to have an injury replacement when it comes up.
Do you feel like this team needs also a little boost of athleticism?
They're one of the worst base running teams in the league. And I feel like you have a couple pieces, right? Eli White, they don't use him enough as a pinch runner and a guy that can steal. But overall, it's not a super athletic lineup. And I do think you've seen a little bit in the postseason, the Guardians have been kind of a great example of that, how that athleticism can put other teams on edge and can give you an advantage in specific situations. I would not hate to see either the bench piece they add or the outfielder that they add be somebody who's adept at stolen bases, who can take an extra base on a base hit, something, things that the Braves have not been good at, simply because if they're working on drawing walks, if they're working on stringing together multiple hits, give me a guy who can score from first on a base hit, you know, on a double, or can score from second on a single. Give me that guy. And Atlanta doesn't really have enough of those right now.
Lindsay, appreciate the time as always. We'll be checking out the pod and we'll chat soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right. That is Lindsay Crosby there of Braves Today. All right. When we get back, let's continue to honor and salute Snit. Brandon Gaudin, the voice of the Braves, stopped on with Dukes and Bell. You don't want to miss his perspective on Brian Snicker and what his outlook is for the team. We'll continue that next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app.